Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Thursday, May 30th, 2024. A church leader in Eastern Equatoria says the government of South Sudan should protect commuters across the country.
Maybe the government has been, maybe they are struggling how really to stop this kind of rampant killing all over. Of course, if you tell, I will tell you, like yesterday, along Nauru Road, going to Kapweta, two guys were beaten badly. Thank God they were not killed.
And a South Sudanese researcher says the talks with holdout rebel groups in Nairobi presents another opportunity for South Sudan to solve her problems.
I think there's a real schism at the heart of the talks in Nairobi. And I think for a lot of the rebel groups and opposition groups who are participating, this really is a chance to reopen Araxis, the peace agreement that led to the end of the South Sudanese Civil War in 2018.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Two people were killed, others sustained serious injuries, and a non-number are missing following a road ambush at Nagerara village. A group of President Kiir's party members who were returning from Juba after endorsing him as their flag bearers for the upcoming elections fell into an ambush along the road to Chukudumpayam in eastern Equatoria State. For VOA News, Kaltuma Vanessa has more from Torit.
Akelio Mboya, the commissioner of Budi County, confirmed the attack. Mboya says a number of people are still missing following the attack.
Many people ran into the bush, and the security team that went to the scene yesterday were able to recover most of them, including a child of three months. Other people who also ran to the bushes were also recovered. And that's where we established the death cases of two people, and the driver was also found dead in the bush.
The spokesman of the South Sudan People's Defense Force, General Low Rai Kong, says some communities in eastern Equatoria State are armed. He says a disarmament campaign could help reduce cases of road ambushes.
They are still armed, and that's the reason why they have been causing insecurity from time to time. So the long-term solution would be disarming all the communities in eastern Equatorial State that are armed. That's one. And once it is done, they also deserve protection from their neighbors across the country that are not armed. Like, for instance, the Taposas are threatened by Karmajong in Uganda, and sometimes they do cross-border raids. The same thing, people of Taposa, they are also threatened by Turkanas, and they have been doing cross-border raids. And the same thing, they also get threatened by Ang Murle from Greater Pibor administrative area. So it is, in as much as is a national problem, it is also a regional problem.
Bosco Lohiang, a member of parliament representing Budi County at the State Legislative Assembly in Torit, says security forces should be deployed to deter frequent attack on commuters across the state.
It is a sign that, of course, all our roads are insecure, and that needs us to double our effort to curb this insecurity in eastern Equatorial State. You know, several times people have been ambushed along these roads, and this Ngarera has been a hot spot all the time, and we have been talking if there could be any deployment.
Reverend Solomon Oriem Abalang of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan in Torit confirmed the attack and called on the government to beef up security at hotspots in eastern Equatorial.
To my view, it is mostly politically motivated because some of the youth have been engaged, the youth have been influenced by even some of our leaders, that we expect them to unite the youth, to make them so they should focus on the peace, but they will find that one way or the other they are influenced.
Kiang says the attack on SPLM members loyal to the president appears suspicious, adding that insecurity scares off voters from exercising their democratic right during election scheduled for December.
It is difficult to judge whether this is a political plan to sabotage the election or it is a criminality of SPLM's talked of making people choose their leaders. And if there are some people who want to sabotage because they want to continue in leadership, we don't know. But otherwise, I think what the party of SPLM have decided is to see that we go for election and bring leaders whom people are having trust.
The commissioner of Budi County condemned the attack, calling it an aggression on the state government and communities of Eastern Equatoria State. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa reporting from Torit, Eastern Equatoria State.
A South Sudanese pastor with the Anglican Inland Church says the transitional government of national unity have done very little to apprehend criminals attacking commuters in some parts of South Sudan. Reverend Tito Abaha says the culture of impunity in South Sudan has emboldened some armed individuals who break the country's laws.
Well, based on the reliable sources that I got from the ground, the team left Juba and they went straight and they spent night in Camp 15. Camp 15, of course, you know, with the situation of the road, it's very hard for them to travel at night. So the following day, which was yesterday, they were able to leave in the morning as they were going, reaching somewhere called Lojon in between Chukdum and Camp 15. Just within Lojon, there is a river there. The situation of that river is very bad. So the truck has to go very slowly. And that's where these people fell into an ambush. I thank God because all of them were able to reach home safely, running for the whole day until the next day today, they reach home.
This is not the first time such attacks are occurring. What is happening in that part of South Sudan?
Well, brother, let me tell you, South Sudan has been in war for a long time, and the country has been going through war for many, many years. And it is not easy to cap this kind of insecurity. It is all over the country. It's not only in one side, everywhere. Everywhere in the country, insecurity is on very, very high. I think maybe the authority will need to answer part of this question, how they would be able to handle the insecurity that is aggravating in the country. And from the church point of view, we are handling humanitarian, and we have been victims, of course, of the same problem. Of course, you have heard probably 2 to 3 weeks ago, a pastor was killed in Western Equatoria. This is just one of the examples and others. To deal with this situation, it requires the government to really do their own assignment that has been given to them by God.
People who could be listening to me and you would also say that men and women in the church have a prophetic duty to speak on behalf of those who have no voice or those who could not speak. What is the church doing?
Well, the church has been speaking loudly on the issues affecting the citizen of Republic of South Sudan. And the church has been talking seriously about it. And even South Sudan Council of Churches has been talking about it. And basically, this might be falling into the deaf ears of criminals. And also, maybe the government has been, maybe they are struggling how really to stop this kind of rampant killing all over. Of course, I will tell you, like yesterday, along Nauru Road going to Kapweta, two guys were beaten badly. Thank God they were not killed. This and many other issues that are happening in the country are not called for. It's not right. And if there is any message that I will say, let the government really do their part. It is their responsibility. Ours as a church, we speak, but the people who have to act on this is the government and make sure that they keep law and orders in the country. I will also have to say, during the liberation movement, there is a little bit of law and order because criminals, whenever they were identified, they were dealt with properly. But now, with the situation today, there are things which are not right that we have to copy. And you know what I mean. We copy some of the cultures which cannot discipline criminals. And because of that, it has aggravated and encouraged criminals because after all, somebody can kill today and tomorrow, he's released. Nothing is done to them.
That's Reverend Tito Abaha, a pastor with the Anglican Inland Church. He spoke with me earlier today from Uganda via WhatsApp. A South Sudanese researcher, Joshua Cruz, who visited the ongoing peace talks in Nairobi between South Sudan's government and holdout rebel groups, says the December scheduled elections could pose challenges to the transitional government of national unity. He tells my colleague Nabil Biagio, the talks in Nairobi offers an opportunity for South Sudanese to address important issues.
I think there's a real schism at the heart of the talks in Nairobi. And I think for a lot of the rebel groups and opposition groups who are participating, this really is a chance to reopen Araxes, the peace agreement that led to the end of the South Sudanese Civil War in 2018, and talk about and really think through things like the constitution and security sector reform. But for the government, I think the baseline is that the peace agreement is unalterable. And what fundamentally they want to do is to bring in the rebel groups back into government on the terms of the already existing agreement. But for the rebel groups, they look to Juba and they say, well, Olon is under house arrest. Mashar can't leave Juba. Why should we agree to an agreement that would just make us prisoners and trapped within a regime in which the government and Salva Kiir dominates?
And there are groups that are not at the talks as well.
That's right. So Cirilo's NAS, the National Salvation Front, has refused to participate because they're worried about their security concerns. As we know, in Nairobi, there have been historically, including last year, a series of Kenyan government-facilitated abductions of opposition figures and activists from Nairobi, the Kenyan capital. However, I think those security concerns are misplaced. Kenyan President William Ruto, who has invested so much in these talks and made them so public, that it's very unlikely that there'll be the facilitation by the Kenyan government of abductions or assassinations in the Kenyan capital at present.
I see. And from the optics that came out on the first day of the talks with opposition leaders such as Pagana Mum, Paul Malong and others, all the smiles, the warm handshakes, it seemed to many that they might be amenable to whatever President Kiir is going to put on the table and fall in line. From what you have observed and gathered at the talks and about the talks, what is your assessment of that?
I think that's a very complicated question of you. I think in these first running up to like 3 weeks now, everyone is looking for the price. The price that the different rebel leaders will exact or demand, and the price that the government is willing to pay. And partly, I think one of the problems that Salva has is that the country is in the throes of an absolute economic catastrophe, from rampant inflation to the doubling or tripling of the price of basic commodities to the breakdown of the major oil pipeline sending oil north to Port Sudan. And in this case, President Kiir really needs some good news. And these talks might precisely be the occasion for that good news. And I think another possibility is that though the rhetoric from the government is, of course, that they want elections in December 2024, there's been very little done to establish elections. We have a very short amount of time to do so, and there's almost no money to do so. And bringing in rebel groups would allow the government rhetorically to say that the elections need to be extended and delayed once again to deal with these rebel groups coming into government. Now, I think on the part of the rebel groups, there's also a real schism. I think for parts of the political class, for people like Pagana Mum, there's a real desire to reopen the peace agreement and to say the peace agreement is not answering the fundamental questions that are before us in South Sudan. But I think for some of the smaller rebel groups, the question is, what's the best price we can get to join the government coalition? And so as in Rome, one of the dangers of these talks is that the opposition won't remain unified, but it will instead be divided by the government, as it has so expertly done with so many opposition groups since the signing of the peace agreement in 2018.
I'm glad you brought up the elections schedule for December. You might have followed what happened at the Equatorial endorsement of President Salva Kiir 3 days ago or so, where he reiterated that his government is determined to hold elections, but said he blamed international partners and people here in the West for sowing doubt about his government's ability or seriousness to carry out elections, but said we encourage inter-party dialogue. Like, he seems to be saying, you know, two things, trying to leave that door open of possible extension or something like that while reiterating his commitment. My question is, what do you see these talks achieving with upcoming elections in mind?
I think we have to say that's radically unclear. 3 weeks into the talks, there are at the moment a discussion over the last couple of days about the constitutional process. And the positions, the gap between many opposition members and the government is very wide. And it's not clear that that gap can be easily closed. So I think Salva is playing a very clever game. I think he knows that he cannot, without some sort of external reasoning, ask for another extension. I think it looks very bad in the eyes of the international community and also in terms of the people of South Sudan. But if he can engineer a situation in which there needs, unfortunately, to be an extension, then I think he would take it. And I think not just Salva, who seems very set on these elections, but many members of his ruling coalition who are wary that they might lose their seats in the case of an election. And I think that's definitely the case for the SPLM-IO, who at one level are asking for the full implementation of the agreement before elections. That's also a rhetorical rod in order to delay elections, because they know in the case of elections, they're likely to be annihilated in the political sense.
That's Joshua Cruz, South Sudan researcher. He spoke with my colleague Nabil Biagio from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, earlier today. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the East African Legislative Assembly is broke. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The East African Legislative Assembly on Wednesday announced that its activities have been suspended due to lack of funds. The announcement comes after the East African Court of Justice cancelled its June sessions due to delayed contributions from partner states. For VOA News, Moses Habyarimana reports from Arusha.
The East African community is facing a financial crisis that has paralyzed the activities of the organs and institutions. During the 17th meeting of the Bureau of the East African Community Speakers of Parliament that took place in Nairobi on Wednesday, the Speaker of the East African Legislative Assembly, Joseph Nakiru Timana, said that regional assembly meetings have been called off. VOA exclusively obtained access to a document dated May 17, 2024 that details the EAC's financial problems. It showed that Democratic Republic of Congo remains the biggest defaulter, owing community $14.7 million. The DRC is yet to pay a single penny since joining the community 2 years ago, despite the obligation of partner states to pay their annual contribution before December of each financial year. George Odong is a regional lawmaker from Uganda.
We are really in a very dire situation as the East African community. We are also concerned that the community has a treaty, and that treaty provides for sanctions for non-compliance. Financing of the community is a treaty matter, and therefore those partner states that have been non-compliant are supposed to be subjected to sanctions. Unfortunately, we have not had any set precedent on sanctions, and this has, in my view, promoted a culture of non-compliance.
Article 146 of the treaty establishing the East African Community indicates that the summit may suspend a member state from taking part in the activities of the community if it fails to observe and fulfill the fundamental principles and objectives of the treaty. That includes the failure to meet the financial commitments to the EAC within a period of 18 months. Kennedy Kalonzo is an East African Legislative Assembly member from Kenya.
There is a need for the partner states to agree on the percentage of their GDP, and then this will solve all these funding issues, because currently over 50% of the EAC budget is donor reliant.
The East African Community partner states pay an equal amount of funds to the community, which represents almost 50% of the EAC budget. Every financial year, partner states contribute $7.3 million each to fund the EAC activities. The outstanding arrears from the partner states stands at $39.8 million. With the current financial crisis, the activities of the East African Court of Justice and the Regional Assembly will remain on hold indefinitely. Moses Avyarimana for Voice of America.
Results are trickling in from yesterday's South Africa election. In Johannesburg, journalist Darren Taylor is closely monitoring the counting. VOA's Yehes Wihub spoke with him a short while ago for an update on the count and a look at the voting process.
There were long queues. I've heard a lot of people telling me that it was, it reminded them of 1994. The first democratic vote that South Africa experienced. There was that level of excitement around it, and I think it revolved around the possibility of the ANC slipping below 50%. So people turned out in droves in many places. There were problems with technology that prevented some people from voting. We'll see later how serious this has been, but at this stage it doesn't seem to have been so serious as to declare the elections not free and fair. It seems that basically there was a good vote and that South Africans are going to have their say in a credible way, and that whatever the results turn out to be, those will be accepted by the majority of parties, or a few complaints here and there, but it should be effectively a free and fair vote that is accepted by South Africans.
So the ANC, like you said, might be slipping below 50%. How about the next biggest party, the Democratic Alliance?
Well, as far as the Democratic Alliance, the DA is concerned, experts I've spoken to are projecting it'll end on 21% of the vote. At this stage, with about 20% of votes counted, it is a little bit higher than that. But if it does end in the low 20s, it would be a pretty disappointing result for the DA. It ran on a very anti-ANC platform, of course. It ran on a platform of delivering better services than the ANC, creating millions of jobs. But it seems as if many smaller parties that were on the ballots this time around have taken away votes from both the ANC and the DA. Two big surprises at this stage. One is that Jacob Zuma's Mkhonto we Sizwe party, the former president's party, seems to be making inroads nationally and taking votes away from principally the ANC, but also from other opposition parties. Now, leading into the election, political commentators and opinion polls predicted that Zuma would do well only in his home province of KwaZulu-Natal, but nowhere else. But that seems at this early stage to have been turned on its head. And the second surprise is the Patriotic Alliance, which is a new party, a new kid on the block. It looks like at this stage it's definitely going to have a presence in Parliament. It's also on track in some districts to replace the Economic Freedom Fighters, the EFF, as the country's third biggest party. Now, the Patriotic Alliance is led by a former convicted armed robber turned businessman, Gayton McKenzie. He ran on a strong anti-immigrant platform, promising to deport what he called illegal foreigners. The EFF at this stage seems to have been doing pretty disappointingly. It was adamant that it would end far above the 10% it got in the last election in 2019. But it seems at this stage that at best it'll maintain that 10% that it got in the previous election.
So with all this, Darren, when will the final tabulations be made public?
The Independent Electoral Commission here in South Africa are saying that it will be Saturday or Sunday. But at this stage, Friday, given the pace at which results are coming in from most districts and regions at this stage, it seems like you'd definitely be able to make a clear call on Friday. But the Independent Electoral Commission are telling me that Saturday or early Sunday is when the full results will be in, and then we'll know what the next step for the ruling African National Congress will be.
That's reporter Darren Taylor briefing my colleague Yehes Wihib on the latest from Johannesburg regarding the South African elections. Juries deliberating criminal charges against U.S. presidential candidate Donald Trump that he falsified financial records to hide a payment to an adult film star before the 2016 election. Campaigning for this election continued outside the New York courthouse. VOA correspondent Scott Stans has the story.
For most of the last 6 weeks, Donald Trump has complained that the charges against him are political.
There's never been anything like this in the history of our country. It's a scam. It's election interference at a level that's never taken place before.
President Joe Biden's campaign has largely refrained from commenting on its opponent's trial until this week, and a Biden campaign appearance by actor Robert De Niro outside the courthouse.
When Trump ran in 2016, it was like a joke. This buffoon running for president. No, never could happen. We'd forgotten the lessons of history that showed us other clowns who weren't taken seriously until they became vicious dictators. With Trump, we have a second chance, and no one is laughing now.
Trump advisor Jason Miller says that shows Trump was right all along.
So the Biden folks have finally done it. After months of saying that politics had nothing to do with this trial, they showed up and made a campaign event out of a Lower Manhattan trial day for President Trump.
From midnight tweets to drinking bleach to tear gas.
De Niro narrates a new commercial from the Biden campaign that it says highlights Trump's, quote, increasingly unhinged and dangerous quest for power since he lost the 2020 election.
Now he's running again, this time threatening to be a dictator, to terminate the Constitution.
If I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath.
Trump wants revenge, and he'll stop at nothing to get it. I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
The Trump campaign says Biden is trying to distract voters from his own failings. Spokeswoman Caroline Levitt.
Because Joe Biden is weak, he's pathetic, he's a threat to democracy, not only with this weaponization of our justice system, but with his wide-open border invasion that is allowing a mass invasion of illegal people into this country. Terrorists, criminals, our economy is in shambles, we are heading towards World War III. Those are the issues real Americans care about.
A PBS NewsHour NPR Marist poll says a majority of American voters are not following the trial. The jury's deciding whether to acquit Trump as the first U.S. president to stand criminal trial or make him a convicted felon running for president. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
That's all we prepared for you this Thursday, May 30th, 2024. We now leave you with the song Stop a la Guerre by Fally Ipupa. I'm your host, John Tanz, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer Kwame Ofori and engineer Nelson Lopez, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.